Thank you. Be seated.
The court is pleased to acknowledge that Judge Spector from San Antonio is here in the audience and will soon be joining us. And we would ask counsel to still address your remarks to the front, but speak up loudly enough that you can be heard through the entire room. We're now ready to hear oral argument from petitioners in Del Valle Independent School District and others versus Lopez.
And with the court, Mr. John Fleming will present argument for petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Members of the court, may I please apologize for the sound of my voice. I'm under the weather at this time. This is an interlocutory appeal from an order of Honorable Joe Diverill abolishing the at-large system under which trustees in Del Valle previously were elected and implementing the court's own single-member district plan, a plan different from the plan desired by either the plaintiffs or the defendants in the trial court. This case comes before you in this posture. It affects the voting rights of over 13,000 residents of Del Valle who are not parties to this litigation. We took an interlocutory appeal to the Court of Appeals asking that they vacate Judge Diverill's order. And the Court of Appeals did not reach the merits of our appeal. Rather, the Court of Appeals dismissed our appeal for want of jurisdiction.
Could you tell me, please, what the status is of the appeal from the judgment of the at-large system?
That is pending. That has been submitted, Justice Heck, and is pending a decision right now.
In the Court of Appeals?
That's correct.
What is the status of the Department of Justice's initial rejection of the 6-1 plan?
We are still deciding whether or not to request Judge Diverill to revise his plan.
But you have not proceeded further with any federal remedy?
That's correct.
Thank you.
We still have the option, though, of taking an appeal of the Justice Department's order or trying to satisfy the Justice Department by submitting a revised order.
Can you make it real simple, then, what's left? What's here in this case and what the effect of our judgment would be?
Justice Phillips, what's left is this, an order by Judge Diverill. It is still effective. At some time next May, I believe on May 1st, which is the first Saturday in May, I believe, we have to have an election. Judge Diverill's order tells us we must have an election.
Unless that order gets considered on its merits, you must proceed at that time.
We must. The Justice Department will say you can't do that.
And both parties are not happy with the order.
That's correct.
And so you really ask that the Court of Appeals consider this case on its merits rather than being caught up with the form or style of Judge Diverill's order to look to the substance of it.
Exactly, Justice Dogg. That's exactly what we want. We have case authority before this court and before the Court of Appeals saying that where the public interest is affected, and we're talking about 13,000, at least 13,000 voters who are not parties to the litigation, where their interest is affected, courts should, I believe, jettison their natural reticence to address issues and do as the trial court did, aggressively address the issue that is before the Court of Appeals, and that's this issue. When a trial court has made an express finding that there is no intentional discrimination by a public body, in this case the Board of Trustees of Del Valle, no intentional discrimination, can the court nevertheless abolish the at-large system provided for by the legislature and impose its own alternative election system? We believe that if the Court of Appeals addresses that issue, it will put an end to the doubt, the confusion in the minds of the residents of Del Valle under what system they are going to vote, because they don't know whether it's going to be our 5-2 plan, the plaintiff's requested 7-0 plan, the court's 6-1 plan. And for this reason, because their public interest is affected in this way, we would ask this court, if it finds that the Court of Appeals erred in dismissing our appeal for want of jurisdiction, to address the merits and not send it back.
Mr. Harrington made a suggestion to the court that this whole matter was moot. Is it?
This case is not moot, Justice Dodd. for this reason. And I will read from the order of the trial court. The order of the trial court on page 2 states that at the election which has already taken place, which the court ordered, the trustees would serve for some of them for 1 year, some for 2, and some for 3. But that thereafter, all trustees elected would serve for 3-year terms. This order governs future elections. The order further states that defendants, Del Valle ISD, shall conduct the elections according to the Texas Election Code. The Texas Election Code provides that we must hold an election on the first Saturday in May, which I believe is May 1st. This order is still effective. At the very least, if the Court of Appeals has thought or thinks that this clause is moot, it should declare this order void and vacate it, so there will be no doubt in anybody's mind the status of this order. The Court of Appeals in its holding said that there appeared to be formal defects in the injunctive order issued by the trial court. All the case law that we have cited to that court and this court says, and I have found no contrary authority, and none has been cited of which I'm aware, that if there are defects in the form of an injunction, because it is an extraordinary writ, the injunction is void. And some cases say void ab initio. And if the order of the trial court was void, the Court of Appeals should have so said, rather than dismiss it for want of jurisdiction. So, on behalf of Del Valle, I'm requesting this court or the Court of Appeals to please address the issue that must be addressed about this order if it is not moved.
How can the order be implemented without Justice Department approval?
Just by doing it, Justice Heck, and putting the Justice Department through the burden of trying to stop it if they wish. So we're in this situation. We have the Justice Department saying, you can't do this. And we have an order here that says, if you don't do it, you may go to jail. Well, we'll take our chances with the Justice Department, and we will obey this order unless we're told not to. That's our position right now. If I may say this, and I don't mean to argue outside the record, it's quite common for the Justice Department not to inform a body until sometimes up to the day of election, and in my experience, sometimes after the election, that the plan under which they held their election was legal and valid. I have just received this day the suggestion by Mr. Harrington, his second suggestion that this case is moot, and I just request leave of the court to respond in writing. I haven't had a chance right now to digest what he said.
Will you do so within the next week?
We will, Justice Duncan. We believe that the holding of the Court of Appeals was wrong for at least 3 reasons. The court said in its holding on page 3 that the order does not grant injunctive relief. Most noticeably because the order did not provide for actual issuance of the writ of injunction by the clerk of the court. The court did not cite any case authority for that holding, and it puts us in a position of having a trial judge tell us to do something, and we thumb our nose at the trial judge, which we wouldn't do, saying, aha, you didn't instruct the clerk to issue a writ to us. We're not going to obey this. We're in a situation where we represent 13,000 people, and my clients are not inclined to disobey a trial court anyway.
So how would you characterize the interlocutory or the interim reapportionment under which this last election was conducted?
It's clearly injunctive in nature, and the cases say the court should pierce the form and look at the substance of the order. The order tells us to go to a 6-1 plan. The order tells us any of a number of things. It tells us where the polling places shall be. It orders us to establish polling places in 6 districts.
Are you merely asking us to render a judgment that the Court of Appeals did in fact have jurisdiction and remand the case to that court to decide the merits of the interlocutory appeal?
We were asking that and a little bit more, maybe a lot more. What we want you to, what we'd like for this court to do is render the judgment the Court of Appeals should have rendered after reaching the merits. This court has the record, and this court can do it. And that will put to rest a lot of the confusion that the residents of Del Valle have experienced because of the shifting nature of these election systems, everybody having their say, myself or Mr. Harrington or the trial judge or the Justice Department. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Before you do, what order do you suggest that we render?
I believe this court should issue this order. It should vacate Judge Durbel's order, and it should hold that where a trial judge has found after a hearing in a trial that there was no intentional discrimination practiced by a board of trustees of an independent school district, the trial judge has no authority to abolish that large system and impose its own.
Well, I followed you right up until that point. I understood you were here asking us to have the Court of Appeals consider that question in the normal appellate process, since they have never passed on the merits of that argument but have avoided it by deciding they had no jurisdiction to consider the question. Isn't that your primary request to this court?
That's our primary request. I'm just asking the court, since it has the power to do so, and because the public interest is at stake, to render the judgment that the Court of Appeals should have rendered by looking at the merits. And I understand the court doesn't have to do that.
Any other questions? Anything further?
I'll just reserve the rest of my time. Right.
Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May I please the court, Jim Harrington, along with Judith Sanders Castro, for the respondents in this case. We find ourselves in sort of an anomalous position because we didn't want the 6-1 plan either, and we asked the Court of Appeals to set it aside, and we asked for a writ of mandamus to prevent it. And we, our fears about the 6-1 plan were borne out. In fact, none of the minority preferred candidates won in the election. But the anomaly of it is that we're the ones that are here sort of arguing that there ought to be stability in the school district, that there serves no purpose by reversing the trial of the appeals court and the fact that the appeals court was wrong, because then we're put back into the position of asking the appeals court to set aside the 6-1 plan. And what does that do? Cause chaos in the school district.
But if the appeal, if the Court of Appeals was correct that they had no jurisdiction, then there could be no appellate review of an interim reapportionment.
That's
like
right, if they were correct.
So the trial judge's reapportionment would be final?
The interim plan would be final. Right. But the other reason...
Is that a bad thing?
Pardon?
Is that a bad thing or a good thing?
Well, Judge, as I said, I mean, we're not in a position of defending the Court of Appeals in this case because we didn't want the order.
Well, I don't mean to ask that question. What I mean is it a bad thing or a good thing to not have appellate review of an interim reapportionment plan by a Texas trial court?
Well, my experience with this court is that there's interim review by mandamus. So I don't know how you want it.
By interlocutory appeal.
Yeah.
Well, appreciating your candor on that point,
I would
ask you more specifically, though I understand you say you're not here to defend the action of the Court of Appeals, it really can't be defended, can it? Isn't the Court of Appeals just plainly wrong with reference to its determination that it lacked the jurisdiction to review what was in essence a temporary agenda?
I didn't find any cases that would support the Court of Appeals. Why do you have to ask me these questions?
We'll never change.
Just so you put something in the order as admitted by counsel.
Well, assuming we reach that determination.
The reason, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Well, assuming we make that determination, then wouldn't the proper disposition of this case, even though it may not lead to an immediate and final resolution of the dispute and the disruption going on within the district, be remanding this matter to the Court of Appeals to consider it on the merits, at the same time that you and opposing counsel may be pursuing other parts of the case in other form?
Well, there are actually two cases. There's a case involving the at-large election method that has been declared unconstitutional, and the only issue in that appeal is attorney's fees. And the other issue is the 5-2 plan, which the Justice Department has blocked, just as it has blocked the 6-1 plan. I think I think the best way that I would suggest the court to deal with this is to say the Court of Appeals was wrong, if that's what you believe, that these are actually interlocutory appeals. Abuse of discretion is the standard, or whatever the standard would be appropriate reapportionment. But in any respect, it's moot, because Justice Department has blocked the 6-1 plan. I mean, we could go into court if we wanted and try to set aside the election. We're not doing that.
Well, when you say the Justice Department has blocked it, they've sent out their letter.
Right.
They've not taken any action in any judicial...
They don't need to. I mean, Clark versus Romer is very clear that that objection invalidates the plan. And if they want to deal with it, they have to take it to the district court in D.C. And they have not done that. I mean, they totally missed the case.
Could they still?
Sure they could.
Yeah.
They could still do that. But they have not done that. And until they get a ruling in their favor from the D.C. court, if in fact that would happen, it's very rare that the D.C. court overrules the Justice Department. But if they were to get it, then they could have the election, but they cannot have it, any further elections under the 6-1 plan. And it's an interim plan.
Are you saying that the status quo right now is that there will be no election in May?
That's exactly right.
How are they going to answer Judge Dibble when Dibble is expecting an election?
Judge Dibble only ordered... I think it's very clear from the record that Judge Dibble only ordered one election, and that was for this last May, because he was concerned that there had not been an election for 3 years. And prior to that, the 6-1 plan had not yet been invalidated by the Justice Department. That was invalidated subsequent to the election.
You're saying on the face of Judge Dibble's order, that is as clear and plain as it can be, that he only mandates one election, and he's not expecting it.
No, he does not say that. No, he does not say that. But we're going back. I mean, we want the 7-0 plan.
Well,
I mean,
understanding that, but isn't it possible to construe Judge Dibble's order, as opposing counsel has, as continuing to impose on the school district the requirement of holding an election next May and in the future?
No, it's blocked by federal law.
Well, I understand that contention, but the order on its face arguably requires them to do that, so that they are subject to the Justice Department, as counsel argued, on the one hand telling them to do one thing and Judge Dibble telling them to do another.
But under the Supremacy Clause, the Justice Department controls. I mean, it's just as if you have an invalid statute on the book, but the statute, of course, declared unconstitutional. You can't continue to enforce the statute. You can't continue to act under it. I mean, it's clear under the Supremacy Clause that this issue is preempted. The 6-1 plan has been blocked. They may not proceed further under it unless they take the action to get it reviewed by the Justice Department. The Supreme Court case, Clark versus Romer, that is cited in the Justice Department letter, is very, very, very clear about this.
How can that be preempted? You already had an election with the 6-1 plan, did you not?
Right.
At least, and it wouldn't preempt it. I mean, the election continued, and it's not the same as it is today.
There was not an objection to the 6-1 plan until after the election. Justice Department did not object until after the election.
And it wasn't pre-cleared, obviously, before the election.
It was not pre-cleared before the election. That's right. Yeah. And we did not try to stop it. We probably could have tried to stop it if we wanted to, but we felt that there should be an election go ahead because it had been 3 years. We agreed with the judge. So, I mean, it was more our call than anything not to try to stop it.
So, in other words, what you're saying, your position is that in light of the Justice Department order, any party withstanding could go in and have the current trustees of the school district removed and a new election, or at least a new election set, based on the Justice Department's current letter. But nobody doing that, they continue to serve.
I'm not sure I'm taking that position that far. In Clark, the U.S. Supreme Court addresses that question about whether it should have set aside the election that had been held. In Clark, in the lower court, they allowed the elections to go forward even though the Justice Department had interposed an objection. And the Supreme Court said that was wrong. cannot allow elections to go forward when there has been an objection interposed. Part of the relief asked for was to invalidate the election, thereby invalidate the election of those judges that had been held under that plan. The Supreme Court simply said, we'll send this back to the trial court to decide whether it's an appropriate remedy under the facts of these circumstances in this case.
So the judge could equitably act either way?
Yes. And it is not our intent to try to set aside the 6-1 election.
But what if somebody holds an election and people come next May?
That won't happen under the 6-1 plan.
There's got to be some enforcement. If people set up a ballot, some voting booth somewhere, and there's names on the ballot and folks go vote, somebody has to move to stop it, right?
We will do that, but I expect that the school district will follow the law of the nation. And that is that the Justice Department has said the Voting Rights Act is very clear that cannot be an election.
That's not what I'm hearing from their counsel.
Well, I'm kind of amazed that they've taken a position that they can ignore federal law when they want to.
Which your position that we should vacate the judgment of the Court of Appeals and the judgment of the trial court?
No.
Or what?
No, that's not our... Is that our position?
Well, you're saying this is moot, that the controversy before us today is moot.
The controversy in the Court of Appeals was whether there was an abuse of discretion granting the temporary injunction. And that controversy in the Court of Appeals about the discretion is moot because the election has been held in any respect, and it cannot be held again under that same plan. So this case is here in a very narrow jurisdictional question, as it can only be on a temporary injunction. That's the only way it gets here, is on a jurisdictional question. And for Mr. Fleming to ask you today to go ahead and rule on the merits of the case is totally outside of, I think, the jurisdiction of the court, totally outside his petition in this case, and none of those issues were briefed for the court. But it's a very narrow jurisdictional issue as to whether that order is a temporary injunction. And if it is, then the Court of Appeals must then decide whether or not the trial judge abused his discretion in issuing that order. Where does that get us? I mean, where does that get anybody in this case? Seems, and when you read Mr. Fleming's response to you about a letter about the Justice Department objection that we sent, he's arguing that he wants stability in the school district. But the net result of where he's going is to create more instability in the school district. So we would suggest that if you're going to rule, if you do rule on the case, that it be to the extent that this should have been entertained by the Court of Appeals, but it's moot. It doesn't get us anywhere, anybody anywhere.
Your first suggestion of mootness with this court was that the election had been held.
Yes.
And the second suggestion filed this morning refers to Clark against Romer, though you had referred to it by submitting the letter.
Yes.
And I gather it is the second suggestion in your reading of Clark against Romer that your opposing counsel is asking for more time, having just received it this morning, to respond.
Yes. And what triggered that response was the one that he sent in, I think it was last week or the week before, to you all in response to our earlier submission of the Justice Department letter. But I think those two facts together, now that we have the objection from the Justice Department and the fact the election has been held, and that's the only election that's going to be held under that plan, moves it out.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Members of the court, if I may, I believe that we might be getting off base by considering what the Justice Department will do or will not do, for two reasons at least. Our firm stood in front of Federal District Judge Robert Parker when he issued an order under the Voting Rights Act abolishing an at-large system and imposing a 4-3 plan that had not received pre-clearance by the Department of Justice. And he called the attorneys in, and he said, why has my order not been complied with? And we said, our firm said, well, because we haven't gotten pre-clearance. And he said, I don't care. You implement this order. It's clear that federal...
And you said.
Yes, sir. And we did not say with all deliberate speed, right now. And it's very clear that federal court orders in this area of the law are equitable in nature, and they are not subject to preclearance by the federal by the executive branch of the federal government. It is unclear whether or not the equitable orders of a state trial court are subject to review by the executive, the federal, the Justice Department. I know there is one district court case, federal district court case, I believe out of California, that says that state court orders, even though they're equitable in nature, must be pre-cleared by the Department of Justice. But that is not settled. And we may yet submit a 6-1 plan that has revisions to answer the objections of the Justice Department, and at the time of the elections next May 1st, we will not have an answer from the Department of Justice. What we do have right now is an order. That order is still in effect. Every time the school board makes a decision, and every decision they've made since the election, has been under the 6-1 plan, has been made by trustees who are loyal to territorial districts or sub-districts instead of to all the voters in the independent school district.
Well, so, understanding that you've just received this second submission, if there is preemption under the Romer case, so that your 6-1 plan is void, what good would it do the Court of Appeals to consider that plan on its merits?
If the court,
or this court, for that matter.
If the court were to consider the plan on its merits right now, not with a in mind with not having in mind what might happen in the future, this court could say right now whether that 6-1 plan that the judge or that order was void and should be vacated right now because it's still effective. What will happen in May, we just don't know, but it's effective right now.
How long has the district had to request judicial review of the Justice Department's pre-clearance decision on the 6-1 plan?
There is no timeline of which I'm aware. We can file a declaratory judgment action anytime we wish. And as a matter of fact, we can file a motion for rehearing before the Department of Justice, and there is no timeline for that either. So right now, we just have this order by Judge Deverell in front of us, and we'd like to see it vacated and have our elections under one plan that doesn't need pre-clearance. That's the at-large plan. The court has to forward a record where it can say the trial court, having found no intentional discrimination, having found expressly no intentional discrimination under the Texas Constitution, Del Valle, is entitled to its at-large system.
How do you respond, Mr. Fleming, that that is beyond the very narrow confines of which the issue before us?
It is beyond the issue before you, but it is the merits that the Court of Appeals must address. And I understand your concern that perhaps the Court of Appeals should have a first shot at that issue, but since it does present a constitutional question, and as I understand the law, we could have taken direct appeal to this court. And because the public interest is involved, we would ask this court to render the judgment that the Court of Appeals should have rendered. I would like to say one thing. As to the results of the last election, two Mexican Americans were elected. And any argument that the minority preferred candidates did not prevail in that election is outside the record. And I will not take this court's time arguing outside the record myself.
If you sought a review to alter the pre-clearance decision of the Justice Department on the 6-1 plan, would you not be taking a position directly contradictory of that you are taking in the Court of Appeals on the merits, or that you took in the Court of Appeals on the merits?
Our position in the Court of Appeals is simply this, that we don't have to have a 6-1 plan if we don't want it, no matter what it is, because the trial court expressly found no intentional discrimination. We are willing to have a single-member district system, but not the one the trial court imposed on us. So if this court were to hold that the trial judge, having found no intentional discrimination, Del Valle is entitled to its at-large system, the case is over. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the arguments and the causes this morning, and all the foregoing causes are submitted on briefs and oral arguments. The marshal will now please adjourn the court.
The audience will please rise. Oyez, oyez, oyez. The Honorable Supreme Court of Texas now stands adjourned, subject to call.